Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are once again joined by our good friend Liz, here to talk more about the death of Vladimir Harkonnen.
It's about time.
It's just wrong. It's horribly, horribly wrong.
Oh, gosh. I mean, we're talking about minute 141 through 142.
That is true, yes.
And I just got to say, Fade is still looking so, so rock hard.
He absolutely is.
So,
and his uncle is shuffling loose his mortal coil.
Well, before we go too far, in the first 4.5 seconds, Fade takes us on an emotional like roller coaster, right? Because like he's horny as fuck, right? He goes to like smile twice, then you see his jaw clench, then you see him relax, then he like goes to smile again. And it's like, bro, like figure it out, dude. Well, or is that just your O face?
I think he needs to change his pants.
Face journey.
Certainly.
Well, no, he's in a still suit. He just goes to the thigh pad. We're good.
I mean, Liet Kynes didn't specify that semen is processed in the thigh pad. It may have a like special diversion chamber.
How would it know? It's just a catheter.
Consistency. I'm sure maybe there's a viscosity sensor.
Oh, okay. That is a headcanon trail that I do not want to go down.
That's a lot. No.
Did y'all feel like the camera lingered on his face a little bit too long?
Fade?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's supposed to make you uncomfortable with how much he loves what he's seeing.
Oh, like how gosh. Into the death and violence. He's just like, yes.
Yeah, I mean, the whole movie, they've been like, yeah, he's a fucking psychopath.
Yeah, so. Now he's like literally getting off to murder. So.
Yeah. I mean, combined with the couple seconds from the last episode into this one, it's like a good 6 or 7 seconds total.
Hell yeah.
It's a long look at Fade just having an experience.
But then we get an extreme close up. On Paul, where it's just his eyes. And
this is Paul?
Yeah, surprise.
Shit.
And unlike Fade, Paul is showing us one emotion, and it's just straight anger, because you can see he's all like pissed off and angry and everything. And he lets his grandfather know this, because he says, "You die like an animal."
Yeah, this was a good try at being more true to the book, because like we were saying yesterday, in the book. Alia, who doesn't even exist at this point in the movie,
not as a born person.
We firmly toddler. Believe that life starts in conception on this podcast.
Well, her hands aren't big enough to kill her grandfather with the Atreides Gamjabar. And like, I see what they did here of like, you die like an animal. Because Gamjabar means welcomes you to humanity or not.
Yeah.
But that whole symbolism isn't here. No. So it's kind of like just a diss and not as symbolic.
Calls him a bitch, basically.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah, it's very undignified. I mean, he's stabbed through the neck and he's just wheezing and...
Is there a dignified place to be stabbed? I feel like just being stabbed anywhere is pretty insulting. And
I think it's more that he's like beached on the throne stairs and like trying to drag himself to the throne. And then that happens.
It's like a whale. He's too large to move. So they just have to stuff him with TNT and fucking.
Hell yeah. It's my favorite minor league baseball team.
Which one? Wait, what? Hold on. Which one was that?
The Portland Exploding Whales?
I know about the whale that washed up in the 70s that they had to explode. I didn't realize that there was a minor league team.
I don't know. I don't think it's their official name, but they definitely co-opt it for some special merch.
Oh, fuck.
That's
yeah.
awesome. There's...
Anyways, back to Dune. We just went down a wild tangent of exploding whales and biscuits.
you know.
I'll let you guys put that together in your brain. Figure out how we got from one to the other. Anyways, you die like an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And we see a shot of Vladimir's left hand, you know, kind of slump over lifeless. And we get a super nice detail of his shield ring.
And I don't think we talked about it yesterday, but he was trying to activate it.
Yeah.
And he was like reaching forward and trying and just not quite getting it. A little too late, anyways.
I don't think it really would have helped.
No, absolutely not. I think it was his habit.
Yeah. I love how just like crude the metalwork is on it. But at the same time, it's like also hyper detailed. Like it's got a indentation on the tip where his fingernail would be. It's got, you know, like the appearance of his finger, but then just like this weird, like blown out part to the metal. Mm. And then that big black jewel on it.
Yeah.
That serves as the activation point.
Probably. Yeah. I love the, we get to see his hand kind of just go and fall limp.
Well, that's how you know he's dead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is the signifier for an on-screen death. It's the hand just goes limp.
Yeah.
Also, the fact that Paul then just like pulls his knife out of his grandfather's throat, which,
yeah.
you know, when you have a...
He's not going to leave it there.
Yeah, well, when you have a big open wound like that, I'm pretty sure that's like, oh yeah, no, this is definitely fucking done.
We know what neck trauma looks like as of recently. Got that.
This is why I stay on Blue Sky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This whole scene made me physically flinch.
Mm.
Like the, I don't know, like squishiness of like yeah. the knife going in and then him yanking it back out. It's like, ugh.
Do you think it didn't look like he went in straight, sure. But when he pulled it out, it didn't look like he pulled it out straight. It looked like he
slashed.
Yeah, cut the throat.
Probably. Well. I mean, fucking Paul's ruthless, dude.
And clearly, yeah.
That's.
Meanwhile, Fade's over in the corner just fucking blasting it.
Yeah. So. Oh, he loves this.
I'm so glad I'm here for this, unlike the book.
Oh, fuck, yes.
I forget if he actually did it or not, but I was looking up stuff to talk to you guys, and the first article that came up was like, Sting offered Austin Butler his codpiece from
the... Of course Sting kept the codpiece.
Wouldn't you?
Oh, God.
It's beautiful.
How did I describe him?
Sinewy.
Sinewy, yeah.
God, yeah. He probably wears it on like one of his 12-hour tantric sex things.
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't think you ever watched the Lynch film.
I have not seen the Lynch film.
Yeah.
It's a trip.
It's certainly a film. But you did watch the sci-fi miniseries, or at least the Children of Dune and Messiah parts of the sci-fi miniseries. Because I remember you and mm-hmm. I were talking a lot about how very white the sci-fi Fremen mini series are. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
You know, the white desert people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's just how it goes. Yep. So Paul jumps up, removes his knife from the neck in a aggressive manner, and he turns towards the Sart guard, and they're just like looking up at him like, what the fuck is going on here? And I think it's worth noting, to this point, he has not even acknowledged them.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said, there have been, you die like an animal. There have been six words
yeah.
said, and like, presumably no one else heard them other than Baron. And he did, so.
That's true. And Paul was on business, or he had some business to attend to. That's done.
Mm-hmm.
And now he can address the crowd, I guess.
He gets about six steps in, and then the Sardaukar all like turn their swords to point towards him. And one thing I noticed.
Mm-hmm. Stabbing position is what I call it.
Yeah. Not all of these Sardaukar have the same swords. Some of them have the like super long Excalibur style like swords, quoting from Martin Soul there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas some of the other ones, and there's 10 of them, by the way, I counted. Some of the other ones have just the like shorter Sardaukar swords that we saw in part one.
Okay.
Which I think was interesting. Most of the ones that had the big fancy swords died when they walked into the dust cloud with the Bashar. So,
well, it's no, we're not unfamiliar with the whole two sword setup. Duncan rocked two swords, a long and a short.
Right, but these ones only have one, like these Sardaukar only have one sword.
Maybe some of them are using their backup blades at this point. Like they're using their short ones versus the long ones. Like they're all equipped with a long and a short.
I will refute that because Art and Soul specifically says that the Emperor's guards have the longer swords.
Okay.
Well, I guess these guys wouldn't have had any battle yet because they're just getting there.
Yeah, that's fair.
Not to agree with John, but
he's owed one.
Fuck you guys.
Yeah, I don't know. I always try to like headcanon my way out of these things. Why would there be that egregious of a production difference?
Maybe they just had extra Sardaukar on staff.
Maybe.
Because most of the Emperor's vanguard is already dead.
Oh, so this is like the JV squad?
Maybe.
Okay. All right.
I will say one of these Sardaukar has a nasty fucking scar on his eye.
Sardguard scar?
Sardguard scar, yeah. Sardguard. Sardguard with scar, scars.
Guards.
Guards. Scarsguard. Yeah.
Does not guard Scarsguard.
Does not guard Scarsguard. My bad.
So, Paul walks up to these guys and he gets, yeah, like you said, about six steps
Mom
away.
And Daddy Scarsguard had another Scarsguard.
And we get a shot of Gaius Helen Moheim just looking terse as ever.
It's her best look.
She gives nothing. Like, our girl's here just giving us nothing. Just like, yeah. Okay.
It's like, I want a day's work, you know?
Well, she's there for her own purposes.
Yeah.
So
she looks at the Baron and she kind of like shrugs her shoulders. She goes like, man, sometimes a bee's like that, you know?
But I'm sure there's no love lost between any of these people. And
no.
Baron.
Well, especially when you think about the, I guess this is a headcanon thing, but that Jessica is the daughter of the Baron and Gaius Helen Moheim. Like that's I don't think it's alluded to anywhere in the books, but it's like a fan theory.
Mm-hmm.
That I know I can't give it full credence, but I like it, you know? It's kind of a fun, I don't know, it's a fun theory to me.
I don't know if it's a fan theory or if it's a Brian thing.
Same thing.
It, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm kidding.
I mean. Brian's books basically are fan fiction.
He's,
so.
Yeah. He is a fan.
That's true.
He would definitely be writing on AO3.
So we get a shot back to the Emperor. And he just whispers, Muad'Dib.
Muad'Dib.
Damn right.
We also see Irulan do the I'm going to hide behind daddy thing too, where she kind of like shifts herself behind Shaddam as if this old man is going to be able to do anything to protect her.
Now, well, isn't, like, at this point, she kind of knows the plan, though, right? So she is like, oh, this guy's actually kind of scary. Maybe I am not prepared to do this.
Well, minutes ago, too, she was like, well, just wait till my dad hears about this. And then Guy Sommerheim's like, yeah, your dad ain't shit, so.
John, have you clued Liz into our theory that this movie is basically Irulan, from the narration of Irulan? Have you heard about this?
Liz, our theory is that this movie is
narrated. Well, I was going to repeat it only if you hadn't.
No.
So,
no, that would make sense, though, because that's what's happening in the book.
Yeah. So we came up, or we kept having the question, like, why do the Fremen know so much? Because, like, the movie Fremen know so much. They seem to know all about the Bene Gesserit, like, planting theory, or planting, I'm losing my word here.
Why, like, it's basically why Chani knows so much about the Missionaria Protectiva.
Right.
But then also at the very start of Dune Part 1, where it's like, oh yeah, by the way, the Spacing Guild needs spice for interstellar travel. When that's like the big reveal at the end of Dune. Maybe not the end, but near the end, after Paul, you know,
it was does kept his whole it was thing. Kept pretty secret up until the last little bit.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, the theory goes that everything up until the point where we see Shaddam open up the message cylinder was just a recounting from Irulan.
Well, especially since all the...
And
now we're in present time.
Now we're in present time, yeah. And she's an unreliable narrator because she's been captive, I guess, looking into the future.
Future.
So it's just all those little inconsistencies that we see from what should be happening versus what we're being told are coming from her unreliable narrator brain.
Plus in the books, right? Like each of the chapters open, or most of the chapters open with something from Irulan's chronicles.
Yeah, her works.
Muad'Dib. So.
Yeah.
So I don't, totally unsubstantiated. This is just a thing that we thought of, and that I kind of like the more we go along, the more I like it.
With all of our theories, I think this is the most grounded one.
Yeah.
We have another one where Alia, because she isn't a character really in the movie, exerts some amount of like control physically over Jessica, especially when it comes to anything that's like super religious, where Alia speaks directly through Jessica instead of like the three-way telephone call that she, Jessica, and Paul have with each other.
Yeah.
The group chat. Yeah.
Which fucking weird ass group chat, I'm sure.
Imagine the emojis coming through that group chat.
That's basically all Alia can do now is like just cycle through the genetic Wikipedia. So she's just reading. She's super knowledgeable. She's probably a good memer.
Just spends a lot of time on Reddit.
Yeah, that's pretty much what she does these days.
It's a little bit more obvious in other sections, but it's weird that she's not in this.
Yeah.
Like, that really changes what's happening in these scenes. Mm-hmm. The fact that she's not born yet. Like, there's a big time jump that they just don't do, which y'all have talked about before. But, like, I don't know. It's just cooler that there's this tiny, she's what, like eight?
Four.
Four? Okay,
she's 4 years old.
She's but a wee lass.
She's four.
She's three or four.
She's like toddlerish.
Yes.
Yeah. Point is that we don't have this lispy ass 4 year old running around with a poison needle. So
that changes the vibe.
It does. I mean, you know, we've always kind of rested on the Denis Villeneuve has come out and said this is a story about the Bene Gesserit, so there's a lot of stuff that is left out because of that. most notably the whole of Mentats, or most of Mentats are left out of the story. I can't even use that as an excuse for Aaliyah and not being around.
I was going to say, how can you say this is a Bene Gesserit story and not include Abomination?
Yeah, no, like, I was saying I can't use that. I can't even use that excuse because it's like it should have been here. But if I'm going to give him any credit for it, it does, having Aaliyah in her movie role makes at least this movie cleaner and easier to tell. Because that's a weird thing to try to portray on screen.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's going to present its own challenges for the next movie, Messiah. Because we're going to have to introduce the time jump somewhere.
Mm-hmm. We're going to probably just have a larger time jump between.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll speculate later. But yeah, no, I agree. Having Aaliyah do all this stuff would have been awesome. Now, Paul, as he's facing the Sardaukar card.
Yep. About a foot away from the edge of these swords, by the way. Like, he's like...
It would have been right no there. Real effort at all for one of them just to go... and just, like, get him in the neck, you know?
Yeah.
I guess since he's being able to see the future at this point, he knows it's not going to happen. Or he's standing just at the precise distance away that it couldn't happen.
That guy is so annoying. Just I'm not touching you. You can't reach me. It's like
he's
a cat.
In my space.
It's like a cat just out of arm's reach.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he starts to use his like aggressive Chocobo voice. Yeah. Here.
It's very airy.
Yeah. It's his, I'm the boss in this room kind of voice. And he tells the other Fedaiken, who are also suspiciously close to the guards.
Yeah.
But they do not seem to have very many, if any at all, swords pointed towards them. I think there's maybe one or two behind them, but most of the swords are pointed at Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And they are just like within arm's distance of the Sardaukar here. Mm-hmm. And they just like seem to have snuck up on them right there.
Yeah,
maybe they used whatever tech Chani and all of her Fedaiken used to not be seen as they crossed into the wide open basin.
Oh, well, no, here's what it was. All of that dust and sand that blew in from the explosion, they were actually underneath that.
With their sand compactors tunneling
so
their way.
Yeah, yeah, so okay. They tunneled up to there. Okay, I get
it. Got it.
So he says, bring the prisoners to the residency. Kill the Sardaukar.
As he's like pointing his knife at the Sardaukar.
Yeah. And I guess no one here speaks Chocobo. It's a good thing.
And then give the Baron's body to the desert.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the Chocobo word for Sardaukar, though. It was like Sadakra or something like that.
Yeah. You can almost like pick it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of where the minute starts to end. I mean, he slowly makes his way out of the room. The swords
starts to like dap up one of his guys, yeah. But
the swords are following him. You know, they're keeping their stabbing position on him. And yeah, he goes to start to give his buddy a shoulder pat, but the minute ends right before.
Right there.
One thing I did want to say is that in this last little shot, we get to see, because the dust has kind of settled a little bit more now, and we get to see the volume of people that are standing.
There's so many.
Yeah. And they are like knives out, ready to rumble here. So it is, Paul brought the fanatics with him through this.
Well, I mean, they can't put their knives away until they are touched by blood, so.
I would have to assume that most of them have been touched by blood at this point.
It could be fresher blood.
I guess we never really talked about, like, you know, what's the time limit?
What's the statute of limitations on
blood with a Chris knife? If it's dried, is that too long?
It's true.
Guess we'll never know.
That is all my notes for this minute. Anything else from y'all?
Nothing from me.
not me either.
Okay.
I think we got some fun stuff to talk about tomorrow and the rest of the week.
So let's get to it then.
Yeah. In the meantime, you can find the Dune Minute online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode, and we'll see you then.
See you.